From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
This morning we welcome owner and chef of Savory Kitchen, Joseph Saladiga. His passion for food and entertaining is contagious, I would say, and his modern interpretations of classic dishes are both comforting and innovative. Today, he joins us to talk about, well, our favorite topic, food, and some of his ideas for Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Thank you much. I appreciate the opportunity and love being a part of the KPCW family.
The KPCW family is a great one. Well, Joe, I wanted to say, I don't know about Pete, but for me, I'm one of those people who loves tradition, but I always think that I'm going to take a new twist on every Thanksgiving dish. Now, it's really hard to take a twist on a turkey, but we thought we'd bring you on to maybe run through a few of these ideas. What comes to you off the top of your head?
I also am a traditionalist when it comes to Thanksgiving and Christmas meals. However, every year I think, why don't I try something new? And a couple years ago, well, backing up, so when I opened Savory Kitchen in 2009, I realized, hey, my friends don't have places to go for Thanksgiving. A lot of people don't have family out here, as we are a transient town. So we have a Friendsgiving at the house every year, and it ranges between 10 people and 25 people, depending on who's around that day. And so every year I think, what can I do differently? And a couple years ago I decided, why don't I wrap my turkey in bacon? Because that should taste good. And it did. It was definitely fun, but doing lattice work with bacon on a turkey is a major undertaking, and I regretted it shortly after I said I would do it.
Wait, did you say lettuce work or lattice work?
Lattice
That's
work.
What I...
How does one go about doing lattice on a turkey with bacon?
Much like a pie topping, but it's bacon, and then you just press it on and hope it stays throughout the whole cooking process. Sometimes you can use toothpicks. I'd rather not, because then you have to deal with them later.
When you find them in your mouth.
I was imagining like a Hellraiser turkey with bacon, so.
Yeah, no pins. No pins necessary.
Okay.
However, my favorite thing to do is turkey leftovers, because then you can get a little crazy and have some fun. So one of my favorite things to do with leftovers, aside from turkey sandwiches, which is a traditional favorite, is to take your leftover turkey, cranberry sauce, stuffing, roll out puff pastry dough, roll it, bake it off, and then you've got a little Thanksgiving roulade.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Goodness. What are some recommendations that you would give some of our Latinx community members to take that traditional turkey and, you know, bring it back home a little bit?
So this year, we do a lot of meals for clients during the holiday, but I do not allow any of my staff to work on Thanksgiving Day or Christmas Day. So we came up with a concept of fully dressed turkeys ready to go in their oven, and they get to cook them themselves along with all their sides. And their sides just get reheated, so their life's easy, no dirty dishes. But this year we had a request for a Cajun turkey, which makes me think, well, how could I bring it home for our friends south of the border? And I would suggest putting a chipotle compound butter under the skin before you roast it. That would be my go-to. I might actually do that on mine this year.
Oh, that sounds delicious. I love that. How would you get that under the skin, though? I mean, I know how to get under my wife's skin, but how do you get the butter underneath the skin? Just make a little slit?
No, it's not an easy process. You got to get down and dirty. And you basically separate the skin from the meat with your hand, and you soften the butter in a mixer, and you just press it in there. And as it cooks, it melts and totally absorbs into the meats. And you've got yourself a beautiful finished turkey. And then you can use the drippings in the pan to make a awesome chipotle gravy.
Pete might have chipotle compound butter sitting around, but I don't. How do you do that? And then, and I mean, you could put just about anything if you wanted a ginger. That's just what comes to mind first. A ginger compound butter. How do you do that?
So, so traditionally, we'll just do like a herbed compound butter underneath all the turkeys, underneath turkey skins. However, to make a compound butter, just soften your butter in a mixer, and you can add all sorts of ingredients and just make sure you blend it thoroughly. So run to the store and grab a little can of adobo or some chipotles, or you could just do fresh herbs. I like to do a garlic shallot butter sometimes. That's really good on your green beans. Things like that. So it's really simple. It should not be intimidating. It should be something that you're willing to undertake.
Well, I was going to say, caveat, don't use ginger compound butter for your turkey. But when you mentioned green beans, I thought, now that's something that ginger could be applied to. So talk about some of those dishes that we put that twist on that we love. I am a huge ginger fan, I will say that. And then I also love coconut. So I try to add, you know, some sort of coconut milk to my squash or my sweet potato recipes. Am I going in the wrong direction, Joe?
Not at all. I like spicy food. So we do a nice twist for your sweet potatoes. You could, instead of doing a mashed yam, you could slice them up and roast them with a little sambal sauce and honey. And that makes a nice spicy sweet potato that's sweet and spicy. Or See, there's so many things that you can do. The ginger, I like to do a ginger, orange, walnut, cranberry preserve. So that's like my go-to. Of course, some people in my family prefer to have the cranberries out of a can, but, you know, there's
in the shape
nothing
of
like,
the can.
Of yeah. course. Yep. I think that goes back to our childhoods.
It does.
And I won't lie, I will enjoy it as well. However, I do love the natural preserves much more.
I prefer it when my family sculpted those cranberry into like shapes of, you know, animals or you know, whatnot. When you come to certain families or certain Thanksgiving meals, and you see that one dish on the table that you just shake your head and you go, that just doesn't match the theme or just should not be at the table. Is there one of those that you would say, let's try to stay away from that dish this year?
That's a good question. I think that more often than not, there is definitely something there that doesn't stick all the time. And I'm totally drawing a blank, and it'll come to me probably at 3 o'clock in the morning. But there's definitely, it's like, why am I having a hamburger slider for an appetizer on Thanksgiving? This does not make sense to me. I could have a barbecue, and that would make more sense.
How about a green salad? Salad
right.
ever go? Like, I think it just gets left behind.
There's often a salad is brought to my house, and I don't think it gets touched because there's too much rich, wonderful food to eat in the meantime. And who wants to fill their stomachs with leafy greens when you've got that one day of the year you can just totally feast out, gain 15 pounds, and not feel too bad about it because it's a holiday.
So embrace the day. Tomorrow is going to be wonderful. Don't worry about those diets or those leafy greens. Just dive right into that gravy.
I vote butter, cream, and more butter to make everything taste good. I'm not kidding. That's really, when you go out to eat, what makes things taste good? Butter, cream, and salt. Yep. And that's why you can't go out to eat every day, because then you'd balloon up pretty quick. Or you got to go on 30-mile bike rides.
That's right. Unless you're having Savory Kitchens, of course, come and cook your meal every day, which probably some people do. And let's just talk briefly about your business. You mentioned that you've been sold out for Christmas week since October, which means that you are going daily to clients' homes. They're probably mostly second homes, people coming to town. They're bringing a big group, and they don't want to cook. Tell us what that model looks like in the world of catering and private chefing.
There's definitely no model to it. It is kind of a best way to describe it is organized chaos. as everybody wants something different. It's catering. So I like to tell my staff we're catering to the people, not to ourselves. So we have to give them what they want. For instance, we've got a client over Christmas week for 10 days. So now you're coming up with this client in particular has 3 meals a day, 10 days. So you're coming up with a separate breakfast menu for every day, lunch menu for every day, dinner menu for every day. And usually you do not get a lot of input from the client until after the fact.
Yeah.
So it gives you a chance to be creative. However, there's a lot of things going on in the kitchen. So during our prep time of that week, we'll have 3 or 4 events that we have chefs and servers at people's homes every night, as well as drop-off dinners, usually 4 to 5 a night. And then, of course, we operate a yurt up in the colony. And we're starting a supper club, because I just like to bite things off and go for it. And that's going to be a fun little project that we have going this year. So do you want to hear about the supper club?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, so
if
this...
it involves butter, we're in.
Well, you never know. It'll be seasonal menus. They'll be 1 to 2 a month. Conveniently located across the street from your studio at the Gallery Mar in the new art lounge downstairs. We will be selling memberships. They will be available for a person to bring a guest to 5 meals in a year, and the menus will forever change. And it'll be a intimate setting of 16 people, 16 to 20 people a night max. Ultimately, as we build this supper club, we would like our members to pick the new members and make it more of a fraternity or sorority of food and bonding.
That sounds great. So I've heard about this concept of supper clubs, and it's a re-emerging. I mean, we think about back in the 50s and 60s, supper clubs were a big deal, but it's kind of a re-emergent thing. And does it have to do, you know, is there a tie-in to this need that we have in our society to start connecting more face-to-face, having conversation, maybe the beginnings of our moves away from social media that have precluded our social interaction?
I think that's a good point, and I that's not exactly why I was thinking about it.
You were thinking more butter, cream, and salt.
I was thinking food mainly, but honestly, the concept of a supper club in the Midwest is essentially a bar that people go and drink and eat some food, but it's mainly a bar when you talk to somebody from the Midwest. With researching of supper clubs on the East Coast and West Coast, but more so in Europe, it's more of a, for lack of a better word, I'll say a fraternity. And some supper clubs in the UK, they reject 98% of the applicants to join.
Wow.
Yes. I can't wait to be rejected.
Well, you know, I'm hoping we can get to that point, because that would be fun. Not really, but kind of. But the ultimate idea is, yes, to bring the community together, people meeting new friends, building new relationships, and without the use of a computer.
Is there a specific audience that you're looking for, other than people who just love food right now?
Food and art is the concept.
Okay.
So hopefully people with that type of a mindset, young professionals, I will not say no to old professionals either, but people that just want to get out and, you know, meet new people. I'm hoping that it's more of a group setting in which you're sitting together communally and with people you don't know. So you're forced to have a human interaction, which I think is definitely lacking in today's society.
You are definitely bringing people together through your food. It is savory and delicious, and you've given us some great recommendations for Thanksgiving. I would want to know, since you're an expert with food, I think you've got to also be an expert with conversations. What would be a great conversation starter for Thanksgiving, or just sitting down with the family? Because there can be some really tense moments. You've got some people at the table who you may or may not want to have a conversation with. What do you start with?
That's putting you on the spot for sure.
I mean, if you don't want to have a conversation, you could very easily get uninvited to Thanksgiving by bringing up politics ahead of time. I would stay away from politics, for sure. I think the weather's always a safe bet to talk about. I like to talk about recipes. I like to talk about food. And I really like to drink whiskey on Thanksgiving Day. That's the go-to. And then everybody gets loose and has a good attitude. Hopefully not too loose and not too bad of an attitude after too many of those.
I have to ask you. I mean, mashed potatoes, they seem like, what can you do with mashed potatoes that's different? And yet, every so often, you take a bite of mashed potatoes and it is heavenly. It is the most sumptuous experience ever. Why? How does that happen?
The long and short?
Yeah.
Cream and butter. But in a serious note, so a funny story, going back to my early days of catering, I was working with Chef Philip Grubisa, who owns Beltex Meats down in the valley, and we were doing an event in Kemmerer, Wyoming, of all places. They were a very meat and potatoes type group, and so we were putting our heads together and said, how can we do mashed potatoes but not do mashed potatoes? And 3 days it took us to come up with these. They were essentially like a potato croquette of sorts that were deep fried and skewered and served on a skewer on a plate. The presentation was beautiful. It was a lot of fun, but it was something totally off the wall that took us 3 days to figure out. But ultimately, to your point, I think adding little things to mashed potatoes can make a big difference. I like to mix in a nice sharp aged cheddar cheese. Sour cream is always a nice thing that if you add it, you notice and you think, hey, this is divine. If you don't, you don't think about it as much. It's just a regular mashed potato. Another good point, mashed potatoes, if you make them in a mixer, which a lot of people I think do, you can over whip them and they become gummy. It has a more of a elastic consistency as you're breaking down the starches in the potato. So to undermix them is better. I like them chunky personally. You definitely, if you make them ahead of time, you need to resalt them before you serve them because that gets absorbed into the starches. I go with heavy cream and sour cream because it's a holiday and that's what makes food taste good.
Good advice. Salt, butter, cream. This is, again, I hear a theme.
Mm-hmm. Well, or as I like to say, black and white flavor crystals, salt and pepper, easily forgotten.
What do you think about the cauliflower mashed potatoes? Another option not utilized very often for Thanksgiving. Would you throw that into the mix?
I wouldn't have. And we actually served some cauliflower puree recently. Came out. You would never notice that it was not a mashed potato other than the fact that it has a cauliflower flavor, but the consistency is the same. If you have a ricer, that's a good way to get a nice consistency out of them. You just run it through the ricer after you cook it. I personally like to roast it first because you get more of the natural sugars and a more robust flavor out of it.
That's really good to know because I typically would just boil it and then rice it and then start adding things. Can I say it again?
Yes.
Cream, butter, salt.
If what a lot of people don't know, when you boil your vegetables, you lose a lot of the nutrients that come in them. Mm-hmm. So also a good thing to not overcook and overboil things in general. Brussels sprouts is a staple that needs to be at every Thanksgiving.
Brussels sprouts, so trendy. We were just having this conversation last night. Well, I know we all had Brussels sprouts growing up, but they were not like today's Brussels sprouts. So Pete seems to be objecting over there.
Sorry. Everything you've said to this point has been spot on. I agree. Bacon, butter, cream. What?
Okay, that's fair. But I will say that I have served Brussels sprouts to someone who swore up and down they would never eat them and hated them, and he loved them. There are many ways you can do them. My personal favorite would be blanch and then a hard sear with juniper berries, bacon, and caramelized onions. That's a go-to, and I've never had a bad word, so I'll take your challenge and I'll bring you some. However, another fun way that doesn't happen very often, and this would be a non-traditional twist with your Thanksgiving, is to shred your Brussels sprouts on, say, a mandolin or something like that, and then braise them in some sake. Mm. And my goodness, that is a very tasty, untraditional, but wonderful, and you wouldn't even know they're Brussels. Do you like cabbage?
I mean, it's not my go-to, but if you're talking the way that you just described, I'm in.
Okay, because I was going to say it is in the cabbage family, okay. So it's if you like one and not the other, I'd call your bluff.
Right.
I was trying to figure out, Pete, if it's the green vegetable you don't like or the trendiness of the Brussels sprout.
It's probably more the trendiness. If you have flannel and a mustache and you're eating Brussels sprouts, you're part of the reason.
That's a fair thing to say. And we do not live in Portland. We're in Park City.
Right. If we could deep fry those Brussels sprouts, I might be more game.
Well, did you know? Because I had to ask. I've been trying to make my Brussels sprouts taste like the Brussels sprouts that you get at whatever restaurant that you go out to. And so finally I inquired one day, and it turns out most of them are deep fried.
I have never.
I would never.
We have standards.
However, a nice little garnish. I've deep fried just the leaves as like a little garnish, but not the whole thing. I did read recently about a stuffed Brussels sprout, which intrigued me. It was like cheese and breading stuffed. That would be trendy.
Yes.
But it sounds really good. Maybe I'll give that a whirl.
It'll probably have some kind of goat cheese in there or something like that.
Probably, yes. A local one, of course.
Of course.
Joe Saladega, it's been great speaking with you. Happy Thanksgiving to you. And again, Joe is the founder and the head honcho over at Savory Kitchens.
Our kitchen, your place.
There we go. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
But we do have a... pickups available at 50 Shadow Ridge Road in the Shadow Ridge Hotel.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
So I guess it somewhat matters to know where we are.
Do you have a Thanksgiving message for our listeners?
Well, I would say sometimes you only see family once a year, so bite your tongue because it's not worth getting in an argument over little things at a Thanksgiving dinner.
Well wow. Said.
Amazing.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much, and right back at the two of you, and thank you very much for having me on the air.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcast, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.